welcome to Health Cetera in the Catskills on WIOX Radio. I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program, where we focus on the impact of local, state, national, and global issues on the health of the individuals, families, and communities in the Central Catskill region. Health Cetera in the Catskills is broadcast from the WIOX radio station in Roxbury, New York, which is the ancient and unceded territory of the Esopus clan of the Lenni Lenape people, also known as the Munsee, who are the first caretakers living with this land. Today, we live in the influence of what is now called the Lenni Lenape Nation of the northeastern woodlands in the United States and Canada. Their territory includes present-day northeastern Delaware, New Jersey, and eastern Pennsylvania along the Delaware River watershed, New York City, western Long Island, and the lower Hudson Valley. Well, today on Health Cetera in the Catskills, I'll talk with Dr. Rebecca Nagler, an associate professor at the Hubbard School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota, about a survey she conducted that sought to explore what the public thinks about the Trump administration's threats and cuts to public health and science. But first, the health of school-aged children is key to their attendance and success in school. But not all schools have a nurse, and it's rare to have a nurse practitioner in schools unless they have what's called a school-based health center. The Lansingburg Central School District, that lies north of Troy, New York, appointed pediatric nurse practitioner, Matthew Hinkling, as its medical director. And I was intrigued by his role and the impact it is having on the schools and children in this district. So I asked Matt Hinkley to join me today, to talk about his role. But I want to point out that he's also a member of the board of directors of the New York State Association of School Nurses, and a board member of the New York State Association, a committee member of the Brain Injury Association of New York State. Well, welcome, Matthew Hinkley, to Health Cetera in the Catskills.
Hi, Diana. How are you? Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, glad you're here, and I'm doing well. I just posted on Facebook that I look every year for this family of rose-breasted grosbeaks to return to my bird feeder, and they stay all season. They're one of the last birds to come and among the first to leave. And just as I was leaving for the station, I looked out at my bird feeder, and there was a male rose-breasted grosbeak sitting there. I was thrilled, and it just made my day. So I'm feeling really good.
I would have to say my wife would be excited, because I know she's out there listening somewhere too, and definitely would be excited about the worry about the birds, because we got a new bird feeder this year as well too. So yeah. I definitely would. She'll have to tell me more about it later too.
Yeah. Good. Well, I hope you have good sightings this summer. So tell us at first, let's start talking, tell us about the school district that you work in, and tell us a little bit about it, because, you know, we are in the Catskill Mountains. We have small schools, Margaretville, Andes, and Roxbury schools, and they're small and they have their own issues, but give us a sense of what the Lansingburg Central School District is about, and how you came to be its medical director.
Absolutely. So our district has just under 2,000 students. We have four buildings, if you're imagining it that way, and one building is our K through 2 building, which we do host a Head Start program for UPK students from a local Troy environment and other surrounding counties.
UPK?
Yep, so universal pre-kindergarten.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And the other building is a 3-5 building, and then our 6-12 and our secondary buildings are together on the same site, and they actually are connected by a tunnel between the two. So we have our nurses in that environment. So out of all 2,000 students, we have what's called four buildings, but technically three overall.
And how many nurses?
So we have been pretty lucky. We have, in our K through 2 setting there, two nurses. We have a registered nurse and an LPN. In the three through five. We also have two nurses, which two RNs. And then in our high school, middle school, we have three RNs currently in that mm-hmm. position. So.
Great. And just before we go on, so how is it, why does this school district, why is it so supportive of having RNs and LPNs in the schools?
It was something that was brought to the attention of them by, you know, someone in the community, but also the advocacy of understanding that there are a lot of chronic health needs in this community. We have close to 23% special education students and those that are requiring supportive services, not just from education, but from medical as well, too. So it's been very essential for them to look at the numbers and say, how can we be supportive? And they also were a district that had strong support from Title I funding that allowed them to get a lot of local education dollars at that for supporting these positions.
And tell us what Title I funding is.
Title I funding would direct money to schools with high concentrations of students living either in poverty and providing supports for a lot of those environments, such as supports in reading specialists, nurses, and education positions.
And so I want to come back to this after we hear about your role, because I think it's really important given some of the cuts. Title I is a federal program, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So tell us how you became the medical director.
So I was part of the local developmental practice office and heavily involved in a lot of conversations with special education directors and school psychologists in the counties and communities around us here in Albany. And one of those conversations was involved with a school psychologist here in the Lansingburg district at that time. And we had discussed the possibility of me coming in and doing some evaluations to help in the developmental environment and be supportive for this district to streamline some of those and identify students earlier to help with earlier intervention and supports. Ironically, then after we started that conversation, about a month later, the school psychologist said, hey, I want you to look at this position that the district is putting together as a hybrid of a medical director option. And I wasn't too knowledgeable of what the medical director role was in the school settings at the time. I was very focused on quality health patient provider. And so I was like, it's not really something I was looking to fulfill or follow through with, but they were persistent. And ultimately, 2 days before they were going to close down this application process, I applied. And when I was able to interview, a few hours after I walked out, I was offered that position. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've been thrilled because it has allowed this opportunity to remain as a per diem provider in the developmental setting and bring a lot of that knowledge and information and learn more than I ever have about the inside school settings and how this works with helping between those knowledge gaps of outside providers and inside the school settings.
And we should point out, you are a certified pediatric nurse practitioner, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, yeah. When you're in the school, in this role, you're not providing direct services, right?
Correct. No, I am not. So
right.
Under the New York State education role, you cannot, unless you are, you know, as you were discussing earlier, some school-based health center programs, but we can get into that as well, too. So I'm not doing that. What I am doing is kind of helping. What it is, and let's backtrack that, is that the medical director is a mandated position in New York State. So every school district throughout New York has a medical director. How that medical director role is involved is very different. And it can be generally looked at as the lens of someone who is a local pediatrician, primary care, or those types of involvements where they will sign on as part of a contract to provide services for those districts, which looks more of helping with health examinations during the sports time for new students, for special education services, working papers, and those will be scheduled out 3, 4, 5 times a year. And aside from that, you may not see that medical director on premise throughout any other time. So they may be accessible by phone calls or emails, but it really will at times come from depending on your district setup or layout. You may have a nurse that may have contact with them. You may have a special director, special ed director, whose oversight is of that position, or even the superintendent in general. And how that communication then comes about is then the next steps and where that relays out.
So you also play an important role with not just the children in the schools, but with school personnel, with faculty in the communities. Tell us about your role with all of these constituencies.
Yeah, so with all those things from the roles, and it kind of falls into your previous question, is by not providing the primary care, I'm looking at it from the lens of a community center. So we look at ourselves as a community health center district, which would have those education roles of how are we helping our staff, how are we helping our family, and how are we connecting to these community sites. And that involves partnerships with, we have a group here through our Office of Mental Health who has been receiving a grant that helps us look into those social determinant of health areas. So how can we provide support for the families with limited transportation, food, clothing, other entities to get their medications, or even help them in getting to appointments? Looking at that lens now, versus when you talk to someone from a provider role and try to explain something to them and then how that's related to a school setting, it's helped in that conversation of identifying health literacy and really creating more of an open-ended, transparent lens between ourselves and the school and the families, and helping these outside providers who, when I see some of the stuff that's coming into the school environment, try to really understand how the families may not be capturing it appropriately, or how we can help them understand to the fullest for the success of their students. And really that differs, because a lot of those traditional healthcare settings I was talking about with the outside providers may be reliant on a head nurse who has good success and has been there for years and years and years and is relaying that information. But they're also at a barrier where they have to then expect that outside provider to be supportive of those decisions. And if they don't see eye to eye, it could create some challenges. Versus me being here directly, being able to understand the team, see how there's some barriers, and see how those conversations may fluctuate from support from every role. Psychologists, social workers, special ed directors, superintendents. We have communication directors, just teaching staff in general. And that involves all those safety levels, too. We've talked based a little bit here probably about policies and where that's come from, AED involvement, stop the bleed conversations, other things for health and safety and the bigger picture. By not being so involved in this environment, I would not be able to understand the role of what medical needs are and how vast they spread throughout school settings, and from an administrative standpoint to really have a seat at the table to help in advocacy and encouragement for those things.
So, Matthew, are you involved in... So, I did work with the National Association of School Nurses, that your organization at the national level, and with some other school nurses was advocating, and I think it was with the CEO as well, that the nurse in the school, even if you're not a nurse practitioner, the nurse in the school should be the health, the CEO of wellness and health for the whole school community. And I know that there are many school nurses who either feel they don't have the authority to do that, or that they don't see that as part of their role. Where do you come down on this? And do you get involved in things like building safety, or things like what kind of food is being offered, nutritional issues in the school?
Yeah. So those, I love that you brought that up, because I'm sure we both have the same dear colleague who would be upset if we didn't mention the chief wellness officer here and how we all want to be envisioned in that capacity. So shout out to you, Robin. I know she's going to listen somewhere down the line. And that level...
She's been on this program, Matt. And for listeners, her name is Robin Kogan, and she's a regular on this program about school health, nursing, and gun violence. Yeah. Go ahead.
You're fantastic. Yeah. So, no, you're great. That area is... The goal is empowering. My position, even as a pediatric nurse practitioner, there's still clearly the word nurse there. So the idea of having nurse oversight from a higher level, who is now your administrative nursing leader, says to that group, how can we help empower you? How can we make sure that the nurses are educated? How are they up to date and competent? How are they receiving the support from staffing to paperwork to conversations to the information that they can lead into for their success? So being here, part of that has been one of our goals, and my goal is to be able to get stronger evaluations for them. We have better onboarding programs that we created We worked on updating our substitutes by having connections and collaborations with local nursing schools to bring them on as substitutes after they're in their bridge programs to help them understand also the world of school health. And having them at that table has been just as important. The advocacy here is, how do we help you, who is the individual in that building, have a seat at the table for your behavior support teams for their social-emotional learning? How are you the one that's having those conversations with the parents and the other team members to really feel like you are involved in building the plan? And are the ones that are medically driven, how are you, as in New York State particularly, the independent practitioner in that level is what you're viewed as, to be the one guiding this and being able to collaborate from those groups as well too. So that my view is they should be at that table just as much. And from my level of having that higher up seat for my day-to-day work, they can then be able to maintain and making sure my communication to them is just as strong. Because if I don't know the things, like you mentioned, with food in the building that's going on from there, I won't know that there's something that we need to improve on and how we can look at that from a bigger lens.
Let me remind listeners, you're listening to Health Center in the Catskills on WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains. I'm Diana Mason, the host, and I'm talking with Matthew Hinkling, who is a pediatric nurse practitioner and the medical director for the Lansingburg Central School District that lies north of Troy, New York. And we're talking about his role as the medical director. It's not a common occurrence for a nurse practitioner to be the medical director of a school district. But also some of the work that he's been doing there. And Matt, let me ask you, what keeps you up at night about this work?
That there's always more to do. And that's what I would definitely see it. There's always something when we are working through this. The lens of public health was new to me once I came into this environment. And I think that that's what keeps me up, is mm-hmm. that this brings you back to those core nursing understandings and your scope to really say, like, where can I really push this to the fullest of my limits to really help those communities, those families, as well as the nurses, the staff, and everyone else? Because that, to me, is the passion for nursing, is how can we always continue to improve and to grow? And what we know better, we can do better. So if I can be able to be a stronger knowledge base, how can that then translate to the rest of those around to continue to build the community for the whole child, whole school, whole support?
Now, you play an important role in establishing policies around health for the school district. What's been the one policy that you're most proud of having implemented?
Yeah, I want to say one, but I've got to drop two here quickly. The first one would be, we got to update our opioid prevention services because of New York State needing to have that as a mandate for how you are handling your Narcan storage and information education. So along with that, we were able to partner with a strong relationship with our local county in Rensselaer and be able to actually get what was called a Nalox box. So now for your storage component, they were actually donated it based off of my facilitation communication with them to give us a couple Nalox boxes directly in the district for storage. The biggest one would have to be the involvement of the AEDs and making sure that that management and that plan transitioned away from individuals who weren't from a medical sense and brought back to the school nurses and to ourselves for the health and wellness side, because that led into us building not alone just how the maintenance and management of AEDs should be stored in schools, but to understand that the next step was having a cardiac emergency response plan. And that is something that is very different in a lot of places, and most will talk about advanced plans and protocols and policies. They'll discuss it around the table. We made that as part of our policy to have one to possibly two active drills as part of that, so we can go from there. And that became a challenge, though, because when you're talking medical and you're talking these types of just drill type levels, individuals don't understand that. So it came down to a lot of conversations with legal teams, unions, making sure the language is appropriate for volunteers to be able to be a part of that thing, and then really understand that there's outside communities that are doing this work too. So with our level of how we put it into play from a voluntary stage and understand that the next level is the American Heart Association is actually working on legislation currently to mandate these policies and protocols in schools. So we are going to be well ahead of that, and I'm very excited that we are able to this year implement those efficiently after a two-year process. And our district is one of those in the state that is considered by Project Adam a heart-safe school.
Now, as I mentioned at the opening, you're a committee member of the Brain Injury Association of New York State, and you've done some work in this school district around concussions in children. Give us the cliff notes on that, because we're getting close to time.
Yeah, cliff notes are, I'm strong in the advocacy level, so as a nurse practitioner in the state, the simplest thing that I've been helpful in is that there is a law that was put in place in 2011 that was kind of saying that nurse practitioners could not diagnose concussions on an interscholastic student, so someone who's playing sports from 7 to 12. And that has been a big part of my level of understanding why that was in place and how we are working on trying to advocate that way, helping education in the district of where we are getting outside providers to understand that legislation, but also really to put into play, return to learn, and return to phys ed guidelines, which have been something that a lot of districts have struggles with. Our overall goal then is to make sure we have that strong concussion management team, which you would look at as a similar ethical committee on when you get a case-by-case situation and how if there's something that extends past a normal 2-week, how you're really helping that student for success.
Great. And then I have to come back to the issue of cuts in education. I was meeting with a local school superintendent who told me that cuts at the federal level would mean $750,000 in their budget. And she said, I don't know where we would get it. I don't know how we would manage. What are you anticipating, and are the health services at risk because of these cuts in the Department of Education?
Yes. The answer is yes, because a lot of, if you look at school funding for nursing overall in public schools particularly, that funding comes majority from the local education dollars. So you're talking probably somewhere about 76 to 77% of local education dollars is what funds that. And the other resources being health departments or hospital systems, but they're a lot lower. So when you're looking at those things, this is now your, you know, loss of the health services potential in the environments, because now those students who are needing support might not have a nurse. But what we've kind of not touched on, or we kind of touched on briefly, is that school health services, particularly here in New York, nurses are not mandated in the state. So how that looks is that schools will then have to make those adjustments of administrators and other staff members wearing those multiple hats. And that's then going back to that role of a medical director really being influential on support and education. But it brings it around to those levels of students with disabilities and other challenges who really are underserved and undervalued populations in the rural and other communities, and how that's going to impact them in a bigger picture, because we know that that's going to involve loss of essential education services and protections from legal IDEA and all those areas, increased disparities, and particularly those undersourced communities, inconsistent enforcement of any civil rights across state lines probably, and really thinking about shifting these burdens on already who's the strained in state local governments, and how those cuts are going to really be a problem for those things.
Yeah, and, you know, I just want to emphasize with listeners, if you don't have a healthy child, they're not going to learn, they're going to miss school, they're really going to be set back, and their chances in life are going to be minimized if they're not healthy and if they don't have these kinds of schoolhouse supports. Well, Matthew Hinkling, thank you so much for coming on to Health Center in the Catskills today. Matthew Hinkling is a pediatric nurse practitioner and the medical director for the Lansingburg Central School District near Troy, New York. Thanks so much for coming on today, and I wish you well, Matthew.
Thanks, Diane. I appreciate the time, and hopefully look forward to some more conversations in the future.
Yeah, come back and update us on how the stuff is going.
Sounds great. All right. Look forward to our next step.